taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans, and welcome to the Constitution Study, where we read, we study the Constitution, we teach a rising generation to be free. I am so glad you could join me today. I appreciate all of you that take time out of your day to listen to the program, whether you listen to it live on the radio or if you're listening to it on the podcast. I appreciate the listens. I appreciate the comments I get. Even if I disagree with some of them, I appreciate it because it means you're involved and you're engaged. Now, today, I want to talk about this concept that's been floating around called a parental bill of rights or a parent's bill of rights. This is come about based on a lot of the stuff that's been going on regarding both COVID-19 and critical race theory in schools and what has been showing up in the news through so many of our school districts. Now, in Florida, Governor DeSantis signed a parent's bill of rights back in June of 2021. I believe Missouri is looking at a similar proposal, and in Virginia, Governor Youngkin has issued 11 executive orders on his first day in office, two of which were related to education. Apparently, the Indiana is also considering a parent's bill of rights as part of a push to deal with a lot of what they've seen being taught to their children. Now, I have to tell you, when it comes to a parent's bill of rights, there's good and there's bad to this. Let's start with the basic idea of what is the role of the state government in education? In other words, does the state government rule over the parents when it comes to education? See, I took a look at some of the stuff. I was looking at the Florida Parents' Bill of Rights. And from one standpoint, I mean, I'm looking at this saying, part of it says, all parents' rights are reserved to the parent of a minor child in this state without obstruction or interference from the state, any of its political subdivisions, any other governmental agencies, or any other institution, including, but not limited to, all of the following rights of a parent of a minor child in this state. And it goes on to list some of the rights that are protected by this legislation. The right to direct education and care of the of a minor child, the right to direct the upbringing and moral religious training of a child, the right to enroll a child in a minor child in a public school or as an alternative to a private school, including a religious school or home education, the right to access and review all school records relating to the minor child, the right to make health care decisions for the minor child unless otherwise prohibited by law. Interesting caveat in there. The right to access and review all medical records of the minor child. The right to consent in writing before a biometric scan of the minor child is made, shared, or stored. The right to consent in writing before any record of the minor child, their blood or DNA, is created, stored, or shared, except as required by general law or authorized pursuant to a court order. The right to consent in writing before the state or any of its political subdivisions makes a video or voice recording of the minor child unless such recording is made during or part of a court proceeding or as part of a forensic interview in a criminal or Department of Children and Family investigation. So there are some interesting things here. And by the way, it goes on. So, from a parent's bill of rights standpoint, if what we're talking about is the parents have rights and the states are passing laws to protect those rights, I don't see a problem with that. And sure, they're using the term bill of rights because it invokes in our mind as American citizens that here you are, here are a list of your rights that are protected. My one concern with this is, how many Americans realize that the Bill of Rights doesn't grant you rights, it protects your rights? Let me say that again. The Bill of Rights does not grant you rights. You do not have a right because the Bill of Rights or the Constitution says so. You have rights that the Bill of Rights and the Constitution protects. So to see states get up and say, you know what, we have seen a lot of nonsense. We are going to codify in law a series of protections of the rights of the parent, and we're going to give it a catchy term, a parents or parental Bill of Rights. Fine. I think this is a good idea. I think in many cases, we need a parent's Bill of Rights, not because parents don't know they have these rights, but because parents don't know that government doesn't have the right to infringe on this. So when I look at the Florida, again, I've only perused the Florida statute. It starts out with a basic saying, all parental rights are reserved to the parent of a minor child in this state. Without obstruction or interference from the state, any of its political subdivisions, any governmental entity or other institution, including but not limited to all the following rights of a parent of a minor child of this state. The way this is worded, all parental rights are reserved to the parents. The parents have it already. They're being protected. They're being reserved to the parents and not even all the ones that are listed, more. Right, including but not limited to all the rights we were talking about. This is the state, in my opinion, doing its job because it's saying the parents have these rights. We are here to protect them. Now, anybody who's paid any attention should know that a law without enforcement it's worthless. It's as worthless as a screen door in a submarine. It's spitting into the wind. It means nothing. Now, a little farther down in the Florida statute, they basically say that the agency may impose an administrative fine for a violation that is not designated as a Class 1, Class 2, Class 3, or Class 4 violation. Unless otherwise specified by law, the amount of the fine may not exceed $500 for each violation. And it goes on to say that the following act shall constitute grounds. They talk about the details of what are grounds for disciplinary actions. Now, here's one part where I'm like, You see, they're talking about imposing fines. So let's say you send your child, if you live in Florida, you send your child to a Florida public school, and the school violates your parental rights. Could be anything. They could deny you access to view the curriculum, make medical decisions, any one of this list. If they do it, and let's say, they do it one time and your child tells you and all that, the $500 goes to the state. So each time a school does this, they can be imposed a fine of not more than $500, and that fine goes to the state. So the state is the taxpayers of that district are paying the state for the actions of their board and employees. Now, on the one hand, well, guess what? The people in that the taxpayers in that area hired the board that oversees this. So, okay. But what about the parent rights who were abused, who were violated? Where's the justice for them? Where's the and again, this may be harder, right? Because what is the justice for a parent that finds out that their rights to control, to make medical decisions about their children, to control their education, they are violated. What do you do as remuneration, as compensation for violations of these rights? And I think this is where we tend to focus on, we'll give them, you're gonna sue them? See, I don't see a chance for a civil suit based on this. Maybe that's part of the rest of state law. Maybe, again, I'm not a lawyer. I don't play one on TV, but maybe in the rest of state law, there's a thing that says, hey, if you violate these types of things, you can sue. Kind of similar to, was it 42 USC 1983, I think it is, that says, you know, if someone violates a right protected by the Constitution, you can have a civil case, you can sue them in federal court for damages. Maybe that's there. Maybe it's, I don't know. But it's meant as a fine, and the fine is paid by the school district. And based on some of the articles I've been reading, there are teachers and administrators that, well, they'd be fine with it because, well, it doesn't cost them anything. See, the thing I think we may be missing is there are people who are committing these violations. We talk about the school district, you talk about the school, it's actually people who are doing it. So I'm curious about this administrative fine. Who's paying the fine? Who's receiving the fine? And then ultimately, what can the parents receive as compensation? I mean, at the very minimum, it should be a public apology. I would think that'd be the very minimum. But, you know, are there continuing costs that are involved? You know, did the child suffer some sort of psychological trauma by being exposed to things that are their minds weren't prepared for? I don't know. This is, again, a bigger picture. What I'm trying to say is I don't think a parent's bill of rights is necessarily a bad thing, but it's not the panacea. It doesn't fix all these problems. It doesn't fix all of the issues we've been seeing in schools lately around COVID and CRT and other programs that are that parents are truly object to. But there is one that I do think is a problem. You see, Senator Hawley has introduced a bill to be called the Parents' Bill of Rights Act of 2021. Now, we say, Paul, why would that be a problem, right? Well, let's get the feds involved. They're the big stick. Let's get the feds involved. Now, reading from the bill, it says, in general, subpart 2 of Part F of Title 8 of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act of 1965 is amended by adding the following. All right, there's my problem number one. The Elementary and Secondary Education Act of 1965 is illegal. It's unconstitutional. It is therefore void. You see, there is no power delegated to the United States to oversee education, much less elementary or secondary education. Therefore, this is power. This bill is a flagrant violation of the 10th Amendment, a power not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by to the states, remain with the states respectively or with the people. This is not a power delegated to the United States. So this bill itself, the act in 1965 that created this, is itself a problem. But it goes on. It says, no state, its agents, its subdivision, or the agents of its subdivision shall deny to the parents or guardian of a minor child any or all the following rights. And then it goes on to things, you know, to review the curriculum, to access information on teachers, guest lecturers, and outside presenters who engage with the students, to access information on all third-party individuals or organizations that receive contracts or funding, the right to visit a minor child during school hours, the right to access records, the right to access information again about the collection and transmission of data regarding the child, and on and on and on. And I'm not saying anything that this bill wants to protect is bad. It protects the right to be heard at school board meetings or other government's hearings. I agree with that. I agree with everything that you want to protect here. The right to be notified of situations affecting the safety of a minor child at school. I agree. This is part of it. The problem I have is This is not a power delegated to the United States. Senator Hawley is violating his oath of office because he's trying to empower the federal government to do something it is not legally allowed to do. So if states implement these things, I don't have a problem with it. I don't think it's a panacea. I don't think it's going to fix all the problems, but I don't have a problem with a state protecting the rights of the parents in that state. I have a problem with the United States assuming powers it's not authorized to. And the fact that it's for a good cause shouldn't mean we throw the law out. Because by doing so, we have given up our right to consent to the powers of government. Let me say that again. By repeatedly allowing the federal government to do a good thing that it's not authorized to do, we have given up, we have denied to ourselves the right to consent to the powers of government. Remember the Declaration of Independence after, unalienable rights, life, liberty, and property? It says that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. You give up that control, that consent, when you simply say, well, they can do anything that I think it's good. Forget whether or not the people consented to it or not. I think it's good. So I wholeheartedly oppose Senator Rowley's bill because it's enacting a power they're not legally authorized to. It is repugnant to the Constitution. And the fact that so many people either don't know or don't care that it's a violation of the Constitution is one of the biggest problems we have in this country. This is meant to be, this is a federal usurpation of state power. And if you're willing to allow the feds to do whatever they want because you get an end goal, if the ends justify the means, you don't believe in freedom and liberty. You don't believe in the consent of the governed because you're willing to use the bully to get an end that you want, even if it's an illegal way of doing it. Now, there is one thing I found in this bill, as atrocious as I find it, that I think would be useful for any states that wish to create their own parental bill of rights. In this, under enforcement, we read, any person who is denied one or more of the rights identified in subsection A may bring a civil action in any court of competent jurisdiction for injunctive relief. Well, okay, they can bring a civil case and ask for an injunction. At least they're saying we can go to court and get an injunction. Of course, then again, they turn around and say, in any case in which the Attorney General of a state has reason to believe that an interest of the residents of that state has been or is threatened or adversely affected by the engagement of an entity in an act or practice denying one or more of these rights, the state, as parens parenti, may bring a civil action on behalf of the residents of the state in a district court of the United States or a state court of appropriate jurisdiction to obtain injunctive relief. Say, Paul, that's a lot of legal mumbo jumbo. What are you talking about? Well, let me focus on something here. So basically he says, listen, if the state, if the Attorney General of the state believes that a parent's rights are being violated, then they can come in and sue. Why? Because of this term called parens parenti. What is parens parenti? Well, I'm reading from Cornell Law School. Their definition of parens parenti, it says, is Latin for parent of the people. Under parens parenti, a state or court has parental and protective role over its citizens or other subject to its jurisdiction. You see, Senator Hawley believe that you are a child and the state is your parent. That's what he just said here. He said, listen, the state, as parent of the people, may bring a civil action on behalf of them. Do you see the creep? Do you see the medicine hidden in the candy? Here, we'll give you a parent's bill of rights, but guess what? The state is your parent. Does that mean that the state gets to decide whether or not this right has been violated? Does that mean the Attorney General, as your parents' parenti, can decide whether or not to sue for some sort of injunctive relief? Does that mean that in federal court, you're treated like a minor child and the state has the authority to do this, but not the person? Is it, now, again, it does say that any person who is denied a right identified in the subject may bring an action in any court of competent jurisdiction. But you've already blown up the jurisdiction because the United States, the federal courts don't have jurisdiction because it's not authorized by the Constitution. But here you're going to get notice that when it's the Attorney General specifically says you can bring that the Attorneys General can bring a case in District Court of the United States or a state court of appropriate jurisdiction or appropriate jurisdiction. The way it's worded sounds like, hey, guess what? You know, you can bring it in individually, but if you really want it in a district court, you got to get the Attorney General to do that. Again, restricting your rights. That's what this ends up doing. So why am I making such a big deal about this? Why am I talking about the parental Bill of Rights and both the state and federal issues to it? Well, because on the one hand, states like, again, Florida, Missouri, I guess Indiana's considering some bills. They're at least doing their job. They're saying, and again, I haven't read all of them. I've read through the Florida one. It says parents have these rights and we are going to protect them. And it makes sense, right? Because schools generally fall under a state jurisdiction. Your government schools, I know we call them public schools, but let's face it, they're government schools. Government schools are created by state law, sometimes by state constitution. They are funded with primarily with state dollars or as well as local taxes. The state is in charge of those schools. Therefore, it is right for the states to make sure the rights of the parents of students of those schools are protected. But it's not the role of the federal government. And again, in Virginia, you've got a governor issuing executive orders. Well, again, I haven't read the details. I'm not up on Virginia law. Did the governor have the legal authority to issue those orders? See, in some states, the schools are overseen by the governor's office and others are overseen by some state board. But are we looking at saying the ends justify the means? If we allow that, we're no different than the progressives that say it's okay to break the law because our ends are so good. It's okay to violate the Constitution. It's okay to violate people's rights because the ends are so good. So if you have a state that is considering a parental Bill of Rights, I would recommend you be involved, you contact your state rep, you contact your state senator, you make sure they understand that any legislation should start off from the standpoint, parents have rights, and here is how we're going to protect them. I also recommend that you contact your state, your U.S. senator and U.S. rep and say, listen, I like what Hawley's bill wants to do, but it is unconstitutional. It is a violation of your oath of office to sign or vote for this legislation. I know we would all love to just let's do it once. Let's get the feds involved and then we fix it for all. But all we've done is create another bureaucratic monster in Washington, D.C. And because we've done this so often in so many places, we are suffering from this overregulation from Washington because we kept saying, let's just let Washington deal with it and then it'll be done throughout the country. In fact, if I were to contact or when I contact my state rep and state senators, my answer is no, you need to repeal that the Federal Elementary and Secondary Education Act of 1965 because it is unconstitutional. It is not a power delegated to the United States. And if you can't see that, if you can't understand that, you are not qualified for office. You're too stupid to hold office. The 10th Amendment is simple. It's clear. And I'm done with the patty cake. If you cannot read the 10th Amendment, if you cannot show me in the Constitution where it says education, you know, regulating education is a power delegated to the United States, then you're too stupid to hold that office. Because you swore an oath, you swore a firm to support the Constitution. You can't even follow it, much less understand what's in it. You're probably a very intelligent person, but here you're ignorant. And that makes you unqualified. And until we started treating those people in Washington as our employees rather than our masters, we will continue to live as subjects of tyrants in Washington rather than the masters of Congresses and courts that Abraham Lincoln said that we are. Now, I have to take a break. Before I do, do me a favor. You know, this program comes out on podcasts, and you can find it on a lot of platforms. But have you thought about subscribing and sharing, rating these podcasts, helping other people to find the work that we're doing here at the Constitution Study? Now, you've got the America Out Loud podcast. The Constitution Study has its own podcast. I'm on Rumble and YouTube most of the time. I'm on Twitter and Gab and Locals. These are all places where you can find resources and you can share them. You can just head to the constitutionstudy.com. All the articles and videos I put out there, links to the radio program, share them so that other people can find out about the Constitution Study, can get a point of view based on what the Constitution actually says, to help spread the blessings of liberty by reading and studying the Constitution. And if you could do that for me, I would appreciate it greatly, because it helps others find out about the Constitution Study. It helps others support the work that I'm doing. And it helps others find the classes and training and stuff that I put on the Constitution Scholar. So if you could do that, I would appreciate it greatly. Also, if you could head over to healthycell.com, you know, maybe you're looking to sleep better or have more focus. Maybe you're looking for just to live a healthier lifestyle. Well, check out Healthy Cell. They are a leading innovator in nutritional supplements for health at the cellular level. They've developed a system to give maximum absorption of your vitamins to your body, so that it lives better. Now, I'm working on my next set of tour stops. And when I'm on the road, I know I'm not going to sleep very well. I've had a job that has me on the road for 25, 30 years. And it was not uncommon for me to be on the road, and I know I'm not going to sleep. My wife, she frequently has a problem sleeping. Well, I use Healthy Cell's REM sleep. It helps me get drowsy, fall asleep, stay asleep so I can sleep better and awake, refreshed, and ready to go. I use it, and I recommend to people who want to sleep better. And since you're an America Out Loud listener, I got a good news for you. See, if you use the code OUTLOUD at checkout, Healthy Cell will give you 20% off your first order. So whether you're trying REM sleep or any of their products, go to healthycell.com, check out all their products, decide what you want to try, and then use the code OUTLOUD at checkout to get 20% off that first order.
It's time to rethink COVID disinfection. A study by Harvard, Drexel, and Virginia Tech concluded, we don't have a single documented case of COVID transmission through surfaces. The reality is that COVID spreads mainly through the air. Shared air is the problem, not shared surfaces. The solution is the Genesis Fogger, which uses natural HOCL to disinfect both air and surfaces simultaneously. It's perfect for home or business. NIH says HOCL may well be the disinfectant of choice for coronaviruses. There's nothing more natural or more effective. Genesis fogs at the precise particle size to combat COVID and other harmful pathogens. It's what's missing from your disinfecting protocol. Visit genesisfogger.com. America Out Loud listeners receive a 15% discount with promo code OUTLOUD at genesisfogger.com/outloud.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep can be infuriating. Your mind races. You toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's digital age makes it even harder. You're not alone with this struggle. Poor sleep affects over 70% of Americans. Even the Centers for Disease Control label insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. To take back your sleep, Healthy Cell has created REM Sleep, the only sleep supplement made to support all four stages of human sleep with calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support, delivered in a patent-pending, pill-free, ultra-absorption microgel formula that tastes great. Fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deeply, and wake up refreshed with Healthy Cell's REM Sleep. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
The invincible American spirit drives the most audacious experiment in the history of self-government. America Out Loud celebrates the American spirit every minute of every day. AmericaOutLoud.com. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. I'm glad you came back. I'm glad you joined me. Today, we're talking about parental Bill of Rights. And I spent the first half of the episode talking about different attempts to come up with parental Bill of Rights, several of them from the state, one illegally via the federal government. But they should all start with the idea of parents have rights. The state should be saying, we are protecting these rights and this is how we're doing it. The feds should just leave it alone because it's not a power delegated to them. It is illegal for them to get involved with this. And this is important. You know, as I say, I don't have a problem so much with the Bill of Rights as long as they are recognizing the inherent rights of parents. But they're not the panacea. They're not going to fix all of this because the problem is more than just, oh, well, we didn't recognize. We forgot the parents had rights. It's this whole attitude of what's called parent parentis, the idea that the state, the government, is your parent, and therefore, well, it's there to take care of you, to fix all the boo-boos. Now, let's take a look at a recent example. If you've followed the news, you've noticed that there are plenty of reports saying that when it comes to COVID-19, natural immunity is far superior to the jab. It's more durable, it's more broad, it has, in many cases, fewer risks, especially when you look at all these boosters. Yet the CDC, after admitting that natural immunity is better than their vaccines, turned around and said, yeah, but we should still get children vaccinated. Now, I remember as a child, granted this was many decades ago, but I remember being sent to play with a young boy who had chicken pox because the natural immunity I would get from having from catching chickenpox was far superior to anything else I could get, and it was important. But no, that apparently doesn't matter to the CDC anymore. You see, in a CDC report, they noted that surviving COVID-19 provides excellent natural immunity, not only to repeated infection, but also to hospitalization and death rate, especially for the Delta variant, the more deadly of the recent variants. But again, the same CDC 2 days later comes around and says, it's time to update vaccination policy and school work requirement across federal, state, and county governments. they still want you to get jabbed. And in fact, one Stanford medical school professor said the CDC's recent portrayal of severe pediatric COVID study, well, they said it was really misleading. See, this is why, forget the parental bill of rights. This is why parents need to recognize they have rights and act that way. See, my concern with the parents' bill of rights is not so much that to think the parents don't have rights. It's that they're dependent on government in order to exercise their rights, protect their rights, exercise them. I mean, if you're dependent on government to actually exercise your rights, are they really your rights? And again, we're dealing with parents, yet we turn around and what do we see? We see the CDC and teachers' unions pushing to keep your children masked. See, several states have been lifting the mask mandates for schools. Yet the CDC says now's not the moment. Then when is? Not to mention America's second largest teachers' union echoed the statement. The union boss echoed the statement. No, we don't want to remove. Why? What happened to this idea of parental rights? Again, we're dealing with the questions, are we going to deal with science or are we going to deal with propaganda? Are we going to recognize that children have never been at severe risk from COVID? Never, never, never. I'm going to say one more time, never. The average death rate amongst children from both 0 to 5 and was 0 to 4 and 5 to 11 rounds to zero. There have been a 200 or 300 in a population of 330 million. Yet we have bureaucrats and others saying, nope, you can't make decisions for your children. They must be vaccinated. They must be masked. They must be controlled. Well, again, are you parents or not? As parents, do you have the control over what happens to your child and say, no, that this will not happen? Or are you sitting there waiting for some government bureaucrat to say, yeah, you know what? I've got the power to do this. The parents have the power to do this. Are you waiting for some court to do it? See, that to me is the rub. If we are waiting for some government to pass a parental bill of rights or for some court to recognize and protect and issue an injunction, well, then parents don't have rights except those that government grants to them. And in that case, government truly has taken the role of parens parenti, of parent of the people. And you are nothing but a misbehaving child that has to be sent to bed without their supper. But it's not only government that wants to control what your child is taught, that wants to control what they're exposed to. Now, I agree there are certain things that, you know, you don't expose children to, age appropriate and stuff like that, but who decides? Who decides? See, recently a Minnesota school removed The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn and To Kill a Mockingbird from its curriculum because it made students uncomfortable. Good. Good. Now, I have to admit, I've never been a big fan of Finn. But To Kill a Mockingbird is a story. It's those who refuse to learn from history are doomed to repeat it. If we don't learn from our history, if we don't learn from our mistakes, if we avoid them because they're uncomfortable, or if we let our children avoid them because they're uncomfortable, we aren't raising healthy children. We're raising stunted children. Children who will repeat the mistakes of the past because they've never learned to look them in the eye and say, that was bad. As I understand Huckleberry Finn, it was an attack on the racist standards in much of the South. Yet it's being pulled because it made children uncomfortable. We have examples of different groups pulling and sometimes literally burning books like Harry Potter, or denouncing Little House on the Prairie and Mary Poppins because they're racist? Now, maybe they are, maybe they aren't, but if we don't learn, if we pretend that racism never happened, we set the stage for it to return, and it is returning. Because now we have racism being indoctrinated into our children because we refuse to look at how bad it was and say, I don't want to repeat that, whether it's one direction or another. But tell me, shouldn't it be the parents that are deciding? Not the special interest groups? Not the NAACP or other groups because they don't like what's in these books? In Burbank, California, they removed Mark Twain's Huckleberry Finn, the lampooning, the pointing out of the racism, the anti-racist masterpiece, as it's sometimes referred to, because it used a bad word. Mothers and fathers, shouldn't that be your decision about if and when to expose your child to the facts of the past? That life didn't exist when it actually existed before they were born, and there were life was different and standards were different. Shouldn't it be your choice of when to expose your children to that information? And let's face it, schools are not really a safe place to be. I am being overly general, right? There are many schools that are wonderful. I'm sure they're wonderful, they're safe, but there are a lot of schools that are truly, truly dangerous. And maybe not in the way you're thinking of. I found this story. I find this story terribly disturbing. And I cannot help but feel for, there's no way I could comprehend what these parents must be going through. But I feel so much for them. See, these parents were called to school after their 12-year-old daughter attempted to take her life on school property twice. Twice. And these were precipitated by secret meetings with a school counselor. Now, according to the lawsuit filed on behalf of these parents, the reason this girl tried to take her own life was because of her gender identity issues. And the fact that, you know, being Christians and Catholic, well, the parents would not be okay with this. Now, according to the complaint, the daughter sought guidance from counselors because she was being bullied. See, she likes video games. And it was something her peers said that boys do. And a friend confided that she thought she might be transgender. So the girl thought she could be transgender because, well, she wanted to be strong and free like a boy. So when the child went to speak to a counselor, She saw a lot of posters and literature and other promotional material related to LGBT pride and whatnot. She thought, well, that stuff was cool. And she asked if it was, she supported transgender people, and she said, yeah. During weekly private meetings the parents were not informed about, Washington, a school counselor, endorsed the belief that this girl could be a boy. Called her by male name, by male pronouns, promised she would not tell the girl's parents. However, that promise did not extend to the child's peers. See, the school counselor began addressing the child by a male name in front of her friends without the girl's permission, humiliating the child. The bullying that she very much, that she went to the school to find help for escalated because of the act of a school counselor, according to the complaint. This led this child to be more and more confused, more and more depressed. And the people who could best help her were kept out of the loop, her parents. At least until she tried to kill herself. Twice. The Clay County Schools said the meetings were private due to confidentiality issues. Now, granted, my daughter graduated high school many years ago, but do you know why she never went to public schools? You have children who have been force-fed a doctrine that just because you're a little different, you must be transgender. That being a strong and independent woman is impossible. You must be a boy. That playing video games means you're a boy. This hogwash, this brainwashing of the children in the school led this young girl to be confused, to separate her from her parents, and lead her into the hands of a counselor that led her into such depression she was ready to take her life. Where were the rights of the parents? Where was the recognition that not only do parents have rights, but parents are closest to their children? Unless there's some evidence of abuse, the parents should be the ones best able to deal with this. But no, no, no. We have to hide this from the parents because they might disagree. They might disagree with the propaganda that was taking a normal, young, healthy 12-year-old girl and trying to convince her she was a boy because she liked to play video games. And let's not just look at our own back door. Sure, our laws are effective here, but we need to learn by what's happening in the rest of the world. The Canadian trucker protest should be an example that things that start in one place often spread around the world. When we saw the pastor defending the right to keep his church open in Canada, we warned that this stuff is coming to the U.S. How long do you think before something like this Canadian law is called for in the U.S.? See, there's a Canadian law, and as I understand it, if a parent does not affirm a child with quote-unquote gender identity issues, they could be sent to jail. See, Canada has what's called a conversion therapy ban. Basically, it basically says, listen, you can only go one way. Sometimes you'll see it as you can go from being straight to homosexual, but you can't go back. You can go from being straight to transgender, but you can't go back. We're not going to allow you to go back, even if you want to. Now, under Canada's conversion therapy ban, it requires parents, pastors, counselors, friends, and others to affirm the person's mental disorder. Yes, I'm sorry, gender identity, gender expression, these are mental disorders. If someone, you know, if you were to see somebody who claimed to be Jesus Christ or Napoleon, you'd recognize a mental disorder. But you see a boy and they claim to be a girl, or you see a girl that claims to be a boy, it's a mental disorder. But you see, in Canada now, if you don't affirm, if you give up your right to your own consciousness, your freedom of speech, your freedom of thought, if you don't give that up and affirm their error, you can risk jail time. Sounds interesting. California has a conversion therapy ban. Other states have conversion therapy bans. The question is, how long before those bans now involve jail time? How long before those bans start spreading nationwide? How long before some activist in Washington, D.C. says there must be a nationwide ban on telling anybody they can go both, that you can go towards homosexuality or you can go back? That you can go towards transgenderism, but you can't go back? How long before that becomes criminal? How long? We've seen it in Canada. We've seen it. We see it to certain extent in other countries. How long before someone in the United States calls for exactly the same thing? So we come all the way back to this idea of a parent's bill of rights. And why I say I have no problem with them, they are not the panacea. Because when a parent's bill of rights comes in confrontation with conversion therapy, confrontation with the CRT's redefinition of the past, with their banning of anything that doesn't meet their agenda, which side wins? And isn't it ultimately government that decides? When it comes to the questions of masks and vaccines, will it be the parents that decide? Will it be the CDC that decides? Or will it be the teachers' union that decides? See, a parental bill of rights is just ink on paper. They're words. And if you're waiting for some governmental agency, whether it be a legislature with a parental bill of rights or a court with an injunction, when you're waiting for someone else to protect your rights are at the whim of others. Parental bill of rights should be a backstop for what you're already doing. As my daughter is grown, she's in her 20s. She's still my daughter. I will do everything in my power to help her, to protect her. Yes, she's on, you know, she's grown and she works, she's on her own. There's less and less she needs my help for, but she knows that I am always there to protect her. And not because some politician wrote a piece of paper that says, I have a right to. I stood up for my daughter when she was a minor. I stand up for her when she's an adult. Not because some court said I could, because that's my job as a father. We went out of our way to make sure that she did not go to public schools to protect her from some of the nonsense that the government is shoving down our children's throat. We sacrificed. My wife didn't work so that she would be home to raise our daughter, to take care of her during the day, to teach her. We homeschooled her all through high school. She did it in 11 years. The time, the effort, the expense, after living in New York, having to pay my state income tax, having to pay my property tax, having to pay my school tax, and then having to go out and buy curriculum. But it was worth it to protect my daughter, to expose her to difficult ideas at a time and a manner that she could deal with, not what some activist thought. ladies and gentlemen, mothers and fathers out there, if you want to support a parental bill of rights, I don't have a problem with it. As long as you're not depending on that bill of rights to protect you as a parent. Parenthood is a sacred responsibility. It is an awesome responsibility. I will never forget the moment when my newborn daughter, in the little heating tray, you know, they put her in the lamps to keep her warm, when she reached up with her tiny little hand and grabbed my little finger, and I realized it hit me. I knew it in my head. It's when it hit me in my heart, the awesome responsibility of being a parent. And I was ready, willing, and able to commit myself to that. Help us all to commit to that. To commit to being parents, not because the state said you could, but because it is your duty as a parent. And if the state wants to help, great. But it's not because the state says it's okay. The state should be backstopping the parents. The parents shouldn't be the ones waiting around for the state. Take that responsibility. Teach your children. Don't depend on government to do a good job of it. Make sure you're holding them accountable. Make sure you are acting in the role of parent. Some people will call you names. They won't like what you do. But we need to be parents. And for those of you in Florida and other states that have implemented these, if those parental bill of rights are helping you, great. But remember, what government created, government can take away. And the very same government that created a bill of rights to protect your rights can rescind that bill of rights. So if you're dependent on them to protect your rights, they're worth nothing but the promise of a politician. But if you exercise your rights because they are inherent in you, then you can be happy when the state decides to back you up. But if the state abandons you, you can still do the job of a parent. Now, I want to remind you that all my shows go to podcast typically a day or two after they're heard on the radio. You can find them on Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, iHeart Podcast, basically anywhere you get your podcasts. But do me a favor, head over to Apple Podcasts, leave me a rating and review, and help others to find and share the blessings of liberty.
Maybe you'll stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends.